So you had an interesting commentary in the Journal of Oncology Practice. I like the title, Drinking, Not Drowning, How to Deal with a Deluge of Potential Predictive Biomarker Approaches in Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer. What were you trying to get into with this paper? And what's your recommendation to a general medical oncologist, community-based practice, seeing a lot of lung cancer patients about exactly what they ought to do about upfront testing?
So it's funny because we're victims of our own success. So we've really been pushing in the last few years that you want to go away from single gene testing. The classic model at the moment is people are very much focused on what's FDA approved. So they'll do EGFR mutation testing, ALK and ROS1. But they're missing some of the actionable abnormalities. And so as people have moved certainly to some commercial-based, broad-based next-generation sequencing platforms, now they get this kind of data dump of information in front of them, and this is what do you do with it? So I think the two biggest areas of education are, one, not every single mutation that they list is something that's actionable, and that problem, I think, is sometimes confounded by some of the commercial suppliers who will say clinical trials are available, and then they'll list a whole bunch of clinical trials, for example, for P53 mutation, which is not a driver abnormality. So what I was trying to get by that is, if you get something which fits one of the genes, for example, in the compendium of the NCCN, which lists actionable abnormalities now, that's great. You can either prescribe a drug off-label, or you can go find the latest clinical trial. If you got something that's not in that list, the most sensible thing is not just to be guided by a regurgitation of trials which are available, but maybe touch base with your local oncology center and say, well, what does this really mean?
So how about if I say that I've come up with this idea that there are 20 subsets of non-small cell lung cancer from the point of view mainly of first line, but also in terms of sequencing of therapy, that there are only seven genomic alterations that really you have to think about. So my list is EGFR, ALK, ROS, MET, BRAF, HER2, RET, seven of them. Although EGFR is like A and B, T790, later on. You have squamous and non-squamous without targetable mutations, and then high and low PD-L. So what I just said describes 20 clinical subsets. And my hypothesis says the sequence, you have to know which subset your patient's in to know what therapy to give them first and second line.
Well, so that's a move in the right direction, but there are nuances in there. So the first thing is, I wasn't quite clear whether you were suggesting that squamous and non-squamous meant that you didn't test squamous cancers.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So I don't see a big justification if you know for sure it's squamous.
Well, that's the devil's in the details there. So let's say Mrs. Jones walks through the door, she's a light smoker, and they say it's squamous. Did they really make the right call?
Oh, well, we can get into the whole Talmudic thing, but I'm okay, pure squamous, we know it's squamous. To me, it's either high or low TPS, and that drives your algorithm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. The question I usually ask people, I say, if it was your mother, so imagine your mother's a heavy smoker and she gets squamous, would you still test her?
Oh, I'm not saying not to test the squamous. I'm just trying to come up with a common, sort of a simple, not simple, but as basic as we can make it, a clinical algorithm. Because right now, I mean, you tell me, I would say you need to rule out those seven genomic alterations, at least to get to second line.
Yeah, so I would.
So can you comment on MET exon skip mutations?
So MET, there are two aspects within MET. So one is MET exon 14 skip mutations, which we should be clear are missed by many next-generation sequencing assays. So some of these mutations occur in the intron, and often most next-generation sequencing assays are focusing on exonic mutations. So you've got to do the due diligence in terms of the guy who's selling you a test. What are you not covering? The other is MET gene amplification, which is small, and it's really high-level MET amplification. Ratios of the gene to the centromere of four or five or greater. And that's probably only about 0.3% of adenocarcinoma, but it's a true driver. And it's a true driver separate from MET exon 14.
And do they both respond to crizotinib?
They do.
Okay.
There was, I mean, we went through this learning process over the last few years where there is some overlap. So the question is, was one just a surrogate for the other? But we now have cases which only have an exon 14 and no amplification and they respond, and ones with only amplification and no exon 14 and they respond.
So I'm just trying to make it as simple as possible. These general oncologists are trying to figure out what to do and, Hodgkin lymphoma and everything else right now. So, and this is getting pretty complicated.
So I agree with your list, but I would make sure that MET was defined as MET exon 14 and high-level MET amplification. Maybe if you wanted to say I've covered all the bases, you'd include NTRK gene rearrangements in there.